J.R. Reynolds is one of UVA's best all-time scorers. Unfortunately, in his 4 years, the team was never very successful. Yet he remained optimistic and always thought next year is going to be our year. T-Dubs, did you get the sense that he was just swimming uphill?
Yeah, it's kind of like, I mean, that's kind of how I felt with it too. Like as a fan at that era, I was like, all right, you know, just a couple more. We're going to get over this hump and everything's going to be better. And like, that was kind of the mood of that era, right? It was like, we just need this. Like you couldn't put your finger on exactly what went wrong. But it felt like we're, you know, like in the ballpark, you know, but you weren't, right? Because then you'd see what success looks like and like, oh, we're way off base. But like at the time, it just felt like that. Like it was like, all right, like next year, all we got to do is, you know, a couple more plays and couple more Atlanta X plays and we got this thing. But he did have a great career. I loved hearing from him. I haven't heard from him in a really long time. And you know, like we keep talking about that lost generation. But Sean and JR were the two that actually went to the tournament in that Gillen era and actually made some noise and had some promise, which was, you know, a change of pace.
It's one of the best backcourts, right?
Yeah. I mean,
of UVA and they're during their time in the ACC.
Yeah.
There was some success at the guard spot.
And then it was like his career was like, you know, he was so highly touted coming in and then he kind of got lost in that shuffle of Gillen and Lato. But I just remember like he would have huge games. He'd have incredible games and then he would be like 2 for 7, 2 for 10. And then he'd go like, you know, eight for 10, and then he'd go back down, and it was just like his career was very much up and down, and it makes sense now, right? There's just not a ton of guidance and direction in terms of how his minutes were going, what he's doing.
Yeah, it's interesting that he gives a lot of credit to Lato,
yeah,
right, for between his second and third year, for his increase in production,
right?
He's clearly a Lato fan, and he states it.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it was great. I mean, I hate that we kind of, like, when I re-listened to the Devin Smith podcast, it almost was like we were interrogating him on what went wrong for the Pete Gillen era because we're just so curious. Like, hey, you had all this talent. What exactly is it? And we're starting to get a picture a little bit.
Yeah.
And given it is hindsight 2020 kind of thing, but it's like, okay, like,
it's really still trying to piece the puzzle together. Of what's the difference between those two guys? Was it the culture? Right. We're trying to figure it out when we ask guys, right?
Yeah.
And still, nobody can really put their finger on it. It doesn't seem like anybody's got a definitive answer.
But we're starting to get a feel, like, in terms of, like, all right, the communication wasn't great. There wasn't really, like, a great plan. Coach TB runs things. Obviously, he's got a great master plan and pillars and like a thing. But that wasn't always the case. Not everyone double runs a program like that. Then how are they doing it? I don't know. It's interesting nonetheless. That was really cool to talk to JR. I was like, you know, all of these guys I'm a fan of, but I remember that era so well.
JR Reynolds now joins us. JR, thanks so much for coming on.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
It's a pleasure. So you grew up in Roanoke, not too far, obviously, away from Charlottesville, and you played on some really good Roanoke high school teams, right? Did you guys went to a state championship, or
is that right? Yeah, I think we won three state championships in a row.
Wow.
At Roanoke County.
Were there any other players on that team?
Clearly,
there were other players, but other players are one of the
I was about to interject on that one.
Yeah. I'm trying to think. We had Matt Nallen and Phil Wall. I'm trying to think who else was on those teams. But I believe only Matt Nallen was the one who went to play D1, I think.
Yeah.
Okay. For a little
bit. Your senior year, you transferred to Oak Hill. Why?
I wanted the challenge. I wanted to, obviously, you know, the number one high school in the nation. I had the opportunity to go there and experience that and play for a great Hall of Fame coach in Steve Smith. I just felt like it was the right thing for me to do. And I, you know, was happy with that decision.
What did he give you that was that your high school at Roanoke, your high school coach at Roanoke did not give you?
I think
the in terms of skill development.
I mean, he has so many great players, you know, that come out of Oak Hill. So, I mean, he knew everybody's game, and he worked well with the players, and obviously he had great assistants around him. You know, it was on the national stage. You know, we got to play on ESPN, and I believe it was the first high school game to play on ESPN, I believe, which is crazy. A long time ago, but yeah, I think him knowing the players and him having a lot of great players and helping me, you know, helping me prepare for college, I would say that's what he offered.
Right. And then in 2003, you were Virginia Mr. Basketball.
Yeah.
Who was your competition that year?
Oh, I'm not for sure. Not for sure who my competition was, but it didn't matter.
They weren't getting it.
I had the blinders on. I was just looking forward. Wasn't looking behind. So, you know, yeah. I think it would have mattered.
And how did you guys end up that year, your high school team?
At Oak Hill?
Yes.
I believe we finished third or fourth in the country, I believe. Now I was just saying it wasn't a good year at Oak Hill standards to, you know, to get fourth in the nation, but –
I'd say the first look most of us got at J.R. Reynolds, future UVA player, was against LeBron James.
Yeah.
I think that was such a cool moment. What do you remember about that?
I just remember walking in the gym and, you know, just seeing, like, everybody in the gym before the game even started, like a couple hours, hour and a half before the game even started, and it was really packed. And I believe Bill Walton spoke to us and Dick Vitale spoke to us before the game even started. So the atmosphere before the game was crazy. And then, you know, as we came out and seen, you know, the packed fans and everybody cheering, it was, you know, I mean, it's an incredible game.
Well, we'll get to that more in a little bit, but I was gonna say, at what point did you think about Virginia as an option for you?
And who else recruited you?
I committed to Virginia my junior year, which is, it's crazy going back. But I knew it was between, I wanted to go to North Carolina and I wanted to go to Virginia. Those were the two schools that I wanted to go to. And, you know, with Virginia being a hometown state school for me, and I knew a lot of players that went there previously, Curtis Staples, who's from Roanoke, you know, who I looked up to. I wanted to go somewhere where I can establish something for myself and try to build on something that they didn't have before. So that's why I really chose.
And was it something that Gillen said to you specifically? And what was his visit like to your house?
It actually was Tom Herrien. He was the main guy who recruited me. I mean, obviously Gillen was there. I think for me, it was just me coming in and knowing I was going to be able to play right away. That was the thing for me. And obviously I knew I was going to go against the top competition, in the ACC. So, it was a no brainer for me after that. And obviously I knew the players that were coming in with me, you know, Gary Forbes, CJ Bannister, you know, I knew them guys from before. So, you know, I was excited to go in with them. And I knew that we could, you know, have a chance to compete.
That first year coming in, you know, the moment, the hype coming in, J.R. Reynolds here, Oak Hill. How did that translate for you? Was there an adjustment in terms of playing style, physicality to playing in ACC, or did Oak Hill really help?
I think Oak Hill really helped. I mean, the only adjustment for me was just the practices. That was the only thing, the class and then the practices. That's the only adjustment really that I had to deal with at first.
We had Devin Smith on last week, and he talked a little bit about, I wouldn't say unorganized, but he just said the communication, you know, when he was there, it was really tough for him. Like, he just didn't know where his place was. Was that the same for you? Did you have a good sense of where you were playing, how much you're going to play, all that?
I didn't. And that was, I think that was the thing that kept me motivated and kept me wanting to improve and get better, was I didn't have that communication as to, okay, you're going to start, you're going to play this amount of minutes. And so for me, I just was, you know, working and trying to improve my game. So, you know, I would have to play. I mean, right. But the communication, you know, it wasn't there my first couple of years of playing.
And
the adjustment in practice because it was not as good, not as structured as Oakhill, or because it was harder, more, I don't know. Like, what's the?
I think it was just, you know, in high school, the practice is not that long. And, you know, in college, right, you have, you know, different drills. You wake up in the morning, you might have to go practice and come back in the afternoon.
So I gotcha.
That was the adjustment, like, for me. And then go to class and then come back to the practice and stuff.
Right.
A bit longer.
And I would say out of your class, you had Jason Kane, right? You mentioned TJ Bannister, Gary Forbes. How did it go for all of you guys coming in? Because so many of them transferred. How was the camaraderie in the team? Would you say that it took a toll on y'all's relationship as well, or was it?
And that's the thing. We were so close. It didn't take a toll on the relationship that we had because everybody was close off the court. Right. We didn't have any problems with anybody. Everybody was hanging out. I believe the problems came with the communication. Yeah. Guys not knowing and stuff like that. So I believe that's why guys transferred. And that's why it was a big mess that was going on.
All right.
Was it challenging for you to go from 4 years of being so good on a really good high school team that went to state championships, that was nationally ranked, to now going to a team that wasn't performing on such a high level?
It was tough at first, but it also fed me to gave me that energy and the motivation to want to, you know, to want Virginia to be at the top and to win games and to, you know, go into those tough environments and win games, you know, to show people that, you know, Virginia's going to be a team that you can't look over anymore. But in the beginning, it was tough.
You were performing well, playing a lot of minutes, scoring, a big part of the team contributing, but you guys weren't winning your first and second year. Did that ever take a toll on you and some of the other guys?
It was difficult for sure. It was difficult, especially after those losses. It was very difficult. And we had the team. That was the thing. We had a good team. We just couldn't put it together. And like I said before, I think, you know, it was just the communication. I don't think, you know, the staff knew what to do with everybody because we had a lot of talent. And I forgot Eric Byers was on one of those teams too. Was there as well. I mean, we had talent. We just couldn't put the pieces together.
So when you were deciding to go there, UVA hadn't been that successful in the last several years, right? They've been to the tournament one time in, I don't know how many years, six, seven years. Yep. You get there, are you thinking, okay, I'm coming in with this class, we're going to turn this thing around, right? We're going to make this thing happen, right? Then you go to the NIT tournament your first year. The second year, you guys don't go to any tournaments. Going to your third year, what are you thinking?
With new coach.
Something changed.
A brand new coach, exactly.
Brand new coach. I didn't have any thoughts. I mean, I didn't know too much about Coach Lato at first. I didn't know none of the assistant coaches. So it was just going in like blinded. You know, we're going to see what's going to happen.
When were you first introduced to Lato?
I believe it was the summer, during the summertime.
Yeah.
We had a meeting. But after that meeting, I kind of felt his passion and his energy. And then that kind of settled me down a little bit to let me know, okay, you know, he seems like he's going to be a good coach for us, and, you know, we'll see how
Just so you know, Dougie Fresh is very, very high on Coach Gillen.
Really?
I love the dude. I was going to ask you, when you had adjustment from high school to Coach Gillen's team, was your playbook like really thick? Like you had to learn so many plays, it was tough on you. I mean, were there any plays? That's my question.
I don't think the playbook has ever been a problem for me. I don't even remember if the playbook was thick or not, but yeah, the playbook was never a problem for me.
Now, see, I'm kind of messing with you. Did you guys like about any plays
in Gillen? What do you like about Gillen?
Nah, he's just been cool to me.
Gillen is a great guy, yeah, for sure.
Yeah. Amazing. And I'm the last person to say anything bad about somebody's job or profession. I'm just saying, run any plays? Because I'd go to games and I'd just be like, after the game, Coach Gillen, like, do y'all run plays? And he just like makes a joke and pass that.
Yeah.
So Willie Dirsch was on, and Doug is good friends with him. And Doug tells a story with Willie Dirsch. After the game, Doug and Willie are hanging out, and they see Coach, and Dougie comes up to him and says, "Coach,
no, we're sitting, we're all at the same table." And so Willie, do you know Will? Weekend Willie Dirsch?
Yeah.
So you know Will. So we go back, and he graduated. His first job, he worked with me, and we're down watching the NC State game with Julius Hodge, and Virginia's 7, they're 5, whatever, something like that. And like at the end of the game, we know it's like a minute and a half left, and like the strategy and shit. Like Virginia is just running around everywhere and just shoot it like they don't care. So I see Gillen after the game. We're sitting there hanging out, and I'm like, "Coach, can I ask you a question?" Willie starts kicking me on the table. He's like, "Fresh, don't do it." I'm like, "Do you have any plays, Coach Gillen?" And he just like made like a joke, whatever. And Willie's kicking me, and your boy Harry, and I kept calling Pete too. So I had a kind of nightmare that night, but I was amused.
Yeah.
And then we had Devin Smith on last week. Whatever it was. And he said that he only remembers one play that Gillen ran.
Yeah,
Atlanta X.
Does that ring a bell?
That's better than me because I don't remember any.
all I remember about that one is somebody magically floats up off the baseline somewhere after the pick and roll.
Billy, yeah. I think, right? It was usually
funny. Do you guys have a relationship now with your coach? With your old coach?
Which one? Coach Gillen or?
Coach Gillen. Both.
Yeah, I talk to Coach Lado every once in a while, but I don't have a relationship with Coach Gillen. I haven't spoken to him.
When Gillen left, when UVA severed ties with Gillen, what were your thoughts? Do you think it was justified? Do you think he remained for your junior, for your third year?
I mean, at the time, I didn't really get into it. I was just playing, but
looking back now,
I mean, it's a business. It's a business. So if you're not performing, you know,
Did transferring enter your mind at that point?
No, transferring, no. Yeah.
You're pretty good on Virginia at that point. Cause Sean, I was going to say you have Sean Singletary his first year. You could see the potential there. Was there anything – like Devin Smith said in the first practice in the summer when he went up against TJ, he knew. He was like, all right, this dude is different. Did you have the same impression?
Sure. The summertime was when everybody went up against each other. And when that's when you can tell, you know, who was going to do what during the season, during those games, because it was tough games, very competitive. Guys talk, you know, stuff all the time. And but yeah, and TJ was a good defender. TJ was a pretty good defender. So yeah, during that summertime, I knew that you know, we had a tough kid.
And then from your second year to your third year, your production and offensively was massive, right? Yeah. You go from 10.7 to 17 points a game. That's big time. What do you attribute that to?
I think Coach Lado gave me, like you say, gave me that structure, and he put everybody in place He let everybody know what their job was. And, you know, he made – I thought I knew what working hard was until he got there. And he took it up another notch for me and showed me the right way to work hard and what I need to do if I wanted to continue to play basketball. So I contribute a lot of it to him.
Yep. I mean, you guys have – what were you thinking after your third year, after the season?
After the third year –
you guys go 7-9, right, in conference, and 15-15. You go to the NIT first round and then get knocked out. What are your thoughts after the third year?
We're going to come back and do something big. Because it was his first year. Everybody's getting adjusted to the coaching staff. So the second year, you know, guys were adjusted already. And I knew after my going into the fourth year that we were going to be adjusted to the coaches. Because, you know, our third year was they just got there. So I knew after that that we was going to be adjusted. And we knew what he wanted from us. And I knew with me and Shine and the rest of the guys that we could, you know, compete and make it to the tournament.
Right. Going from one coach to the next, and you guys have the same personnel, obviously, plus whoever came in. Did you see that the coaches looked at you guys differently in terms of, like, maybe Gillen liked somebody more in terms of a player versus Leto? Or was we're still the best guys? We're obviously the best guys. Was it kind of natural?
It was still the best guy was the best guys, and he was going to put whoever the best guys was on the were on the court at the time. So I mean, it really was no difference. Only difference was, like I said, the structure and the practice. Those were the only difference.
Right, or even like say somebody's going to play harder defense or better defense. Is he getting preferential treatment between coaches, or not really like that? Or could you even tell because you're just focused on doing your thing?
Yeah, I think I would just focus. But I would say that Coach Leto would let you know what your job is and what you out there to do on the court.
Yep.
Yeah, that's one thing that he was going to let you know for sure.
So then we'll get into a little more detail, but that last year you guys went on quite a run. What do you remember specifically about the, you know, regular season before you get into the tournament? Did you guys think it was you're on a path at that point, or?
Yeah,
he's got a shirt.
I think it was. I can't remember what game it was. It was an away game for sure that we had won because we were. I believe we were not doing so good on the road.
Right.
My third year, and I think it was either the Maryland game or the NC State game on the road. And I believe after that game, I think guys kind of, you know, knew that we can do something big if we, you know, just stay focused and continue to work hard. So I believe after one of those games that's when things turned around for us.
And then you guys get into the tournament, and we'll talk a little bit about it. The infamous twisting of the ankle for you, what was that experience like?
Oh, it was terrible. It was terrible. Because I remember the play, and it happened in the first half, and it was bad. Like, my ankle was really bad. It was – but I had to finish the game. That's the only thing I'm – at halftime, I'm like, just take me up. I have to finish this game. And, I mean, it was nothing I can do. It was just a freak accident that happened. Unfortunately, it happened at the wrong time, but I wasn't going to be – I was still going to play no matter what.
Who was that against? Who were you playing?
Tennessee.
Tennessee.
Okay.
And that was Kenny Lofton, right?
Yeah, Kenny Lofton, yeah.
Yeah. They were tough out to begin with.
Yeah.
And but we had them. You had them.
Yeah, for sure.
For sure.
We could have won that game.
And we were up most of it when you were in. I think we were up 6 when the injury happened, right? We were looking good, and then it was a battle after that point.
Yeah.
And just like back and forth. One of those games. And then walk us through what happens after, because I think a lot of UVA fans were really cheering for you to make the league, but there wasn't coverage like that back then. So, like, what was it like for you? Did you have workout, training camp, summer league? Did you do any of that?
I did workouts. I believe I had like 5 workouts, and then I didn't do. I thought I was going to do summer league. Didn't do summer league, and then my career started overseas and never looked back.
And you've obviously had an incredibly successful overseas career. But it was there. Is there a part of you that was like, "Hey, maybe I should go try the G League NBA route"?
I tried the G League. Very different, and it's tough to do it after you played overseas 2 or 3 years. If I would have did it after my first year, I think I would have probably stuck it out, but it was tougher for me after 2 or 3 years to stay there and you know.
Why do you say that?
I can make more money overseas than, you know, trying to be, you know, stick it out in the G League and kind of see what happens. And the style of play was different. I was getting adjusted to a European way of play and, you know, coming back playing in the G League. It was just different. And I think I played 2 games and then I left after that. I went back over because the money, you know, it was hard to turn down, you know, what they were offering me back then. So look back on it. Probably would have went after my first year and then stuck it out.
Why do you think you would have stuck it out even though the money and possibly the lifestyle might be better in Europe?
I was established then and I didn't have I was, you know, I had won the championship my second year over there, overseas. I had won the championship in France with Asbel, Tony Parker's team. And then I can't remember the third year, but then I went to the G League, and I played for Coach Lado. Oh yeah, I played for Coach Lado in Maine, but in G League,
the Maine Red Claws.
Maine Red Claws. Yeah, I was there for.
That's the Boston Celtics affiliate.
Celtics affiliate. Yeah, and what it was, I think what it was for me, I couldn't get a guaranteed answer for, you know, training camp or something like that. It wasn't no guaranteed answer for none of that. So, you know what happens. Like I said, the path chose for me was to be in Europe, and I'm happy with that.
Yeah, you playing a lot of years in Europe, a long career, which is so impressive, right? And spans through many different cities throughout Europe.
Yeah.
Right? What are your favorite cities?
Paris, for sure. Milan in Italy. Israel. Montenegro. I have, you know, a lot of favorites.
I was going to say,
you wouldn't have got that experience if you stayed in the G League.
Yeah.
Exactly. That's why I wouldn't change anything, you know, if I had to go back.
What's the exotic city where the Red Claws play? Maine.
The exotic city?
Yeah, what's the town there? You just throwing away Maine, Israel, Montenegro, like what? So a lot of dudes too, like some guys just have it in them, like they don't mind the travel, they like new experiences, cultures, whatever. Some dudes, like, we've talked to guys that are like, yo, it's not for me.
Yeah, exactly.
I think Anthony Gill, right? TW he's like all in, like I'm Russian now or wherever.
Right.
Yeah.
Some dudes are like that. I'm like that. I could adjust easy. But.
Yeah, I can. That's the same way. I can adjust anywhere. You can put me anywhere and I can adjust. That's why I think that I have had a successful career overseas because I can adjust it.
That's a Roanoke upbringing.
What advice would you give to the guys now that are making that decision between should I stick, say, go G League or should I go overseas and have a career there? Because I think a lot of it is stubbornness. Like their mind is set on NBA.
Exactly. That's what it is, stubbornness. And they think that, you know, the longer they stay, the better the chances are. But I mean, you can make a good living overseas playing in Europe. There's so many good EuroLeague teams, and a lot of NBA guys go over there. A lot of NBA players come from Europe to play in the NBA. So, I mean, it's a good competition. It just depends on what you want. And the guys just got to stick it out, and they have to have an open mind whenever they go over and overseas anywhere in general, because it's not U.S. I think a lot of guys go over there expecting where they're going to be exactly the same as the U.S. And I think if they're getting in their mind that it's not going to be the same, and they have to adjust a little bit to the lifestyle. You're in a different country. You have to adjust a little bit and understand their culture and everything like that. I think that they can, make it.
As Dougie was saying earlier, the teams, the top tier teams in Europe, and the experience is so much more inviting than playing in the G League. Where the G League, when you started playing, what were guys making? 25,000, 20, 25, 30,000, right?
Yeah, that was the highest.
At the top level in Europe, Anthony Gill's making what? What's he making? $1 million right now?
Yeah, something like that. Yeah,
and living in Russia in a whole nother culture, learning. Learning a new language, learning a new culture, eating different foods, right? Seeing the world. And I don't know if there's a better experience in your lifetime that tops travel, right?
It's not.
It tops learning another culture, right? I mean, there's nothing that education can teach you as much as you traveling actually to a whole nother city, state, country, right? And so I'm always confused why guys who are going to either be 3 or 4 year G League guys or lifetime G League guys and remain in that system where the facilities aren't that nice, the travel is not very nice at all, the hotels aren't nice. Like, there's nothing attractive. There's very little attractive about playing the G League if you're gonna be a 3, 4, 5 year guy, and then after that you're gonna retire or end up being a 10 or 11 year guy. Right? I just don't get it why somebody wouldn't go. But I think it's, I don't know, fear of travel, fear of living and learning a new culture, stubbornness, or always thinking, or is it always thinking, I got a shot to play in the NBA?
Yeah, I think it's a little bit of everything. And to add on what you were saying about the contracts, they also, you don't have to pay for housing, and they give you a car while you're over there.
Yeah. You can figure out how to just spend what, you don't have to spend money, right? You can save whatever you want. You know,
just do whatever you want,
live off of what they're doing. So,
I think a lot of it is the success stories are almost the reason why people continue to stick it out, right? You hear about Jeremy Lin on the sleeping on the couch being two way, and then he's scoring 40 in the league, and everybody thinks they're one step away from that. And it's great for the NBA, I guess, but like, realistically, like, not everyone can do that, and you know, it's like everyone's fighting for that job, and it's like, yeah, it's a tough one. I'm with you. I don't get it.
And that's the thing too, man. You have, if you're lucky, 10 to 15 years to do it. Realistically, it's 5 to 8, right? Like, you've obviously had a long career,
right?
And so every year or two or three that you don't get your maximum loot out of what you're doing and your worth, it's a big deal, I think. It was quick.
I was going to say, now, are you winding down your, are you in your mind, are you starting to plan for post basketball life, or are you still in the midst of the grind?
I started planning, I believe, like a couple of years ago. I knew, I mean, basketball has to end at some point. But yeah, I mean, I'm starting winding down now. You know, we'll see. Hopefully play for another year or two. And, you know, get into some coaching.
Is coaching next for you, you think? Is that the route you want to go?
That's the route I want to go, for sure. I think just to get back to the youth, I think I have so much knowledge and everything. And I think I connect with the younger generation and everything. So I think that's the route I want to go.
Would you ever do it overseas, or you want to do it back here?
Wherever makes sense. I'm open to anything. You know, wherever makes sense. College, NBA, overseas, I'm open.
What foreign language you speak the best?
Probably French.
French.
Yeah.
I was going to ask you, you mentioned Tony Parker earlier. What other sort of household names have you played with over your career that ended up, obviously, U.S., it's all NBA, so.
Yeah. I played with Randolph Childress, the assistant coach at Wake Forest.
Nice.
Last year. And wow. A really good guy, a great friend of mine. Also taught me a lot. I'm trying to think who else. That might be the only person, but I'm played against, quite a few NBA players.
Did you run across, I mean, right now, Luka Doncic, obviously huge star, Ricky Rubio, another one. Did you see those guys coming through?
I didn't play against him, but I definitely saw Luka play a lot. I definitely saw him play a lot, and I knew he was special.
And then Porzingis, did you see? Like, there's so many Euro leagues, I guess.
I didn't see Porzingis too much. No.
Do we want to jump into the photo series, Mark?
Before we go into the photo series, you had a 36 years old, right? There's not a lot of people play that that age.
Yeah, man.
What is your secret, and how have you been able to remain mostly injury free?
I have been able to remain injury free. I mean, you have little nags here and there, but nothing that kept me out for a long period of time. My main thing is just eating right is the main thing. I try to do a lot of stretching now. When I first came in, wasn't stretching at all, and the older guys tell me, once you get older, you're gonna need to stretch more, and I'm doing that now, stretching a lot.
What when you say eating right, what does that mean for you?
Just change, you just gotta change your diet, cut out junk food, sodas, and all that. Just gotta eat more healthier, and work out, and that's a thing that I try to do. I try to work out in some type of way. I try not to go too long without working out, because the longer that you don't work out, is as you get older, the harder it is to get it back. So
right, that week off is harder after.
What's been your Corona workout?
Bunch of YouTube workouts. I actually been doing a lot of bike riding lately. I got into, riding the bike, doing a lot of miles on that. That helps a lot. Haven't been able to get in the gym too much with all this going on, but I try to do what I can.
Before we go into our next series, what is your plan for next year?
I plan on playing somewhere.
Where?
Not sure yet. Hopefully I'll know, something this month. And, with everything going on, I don't know, what's going on with the leagues and when they plan on starting up and stuff. But I plan on playing this season. So we'll see what happens.
Have you had the same – do you have the same agent the whole time you're in Europe? Or have you had a couple?
How does that work? I had a couple.
we'll find out next contract. We'll figure that one.
Mark, maybe it's me and you, Mark.
There you go.
TW. TW in the.
I got a couple of guys for you. All right. So, Dougie, TW runs a series, a photo series. But before we get to that, Dougie has to jump off earlier than normally. So, he's going to ask his question that he has every guest answer.
Yeah, Joe. We didn't. You get put on the hot seat a little bit.
I got this question.
You got to answer this. So, it's whatever your criteria are. You can have, however you want to look at it.
Okay.
But you got to give us, and I'll give you five. It's your Mount Rushmore of Virginia basketball through history, from all the way back through today. Who's your five all-time greats?
My five all-time greats? Man. Obviously, Ralph.
Yep. Happy birthday yesterday, Ralph.
Ralph, let me see. I got to go with my mentor, Corey Alexander.
Wow. Okay. Nice. Did you watch Corey? Do you remember him when he was in college playing?
I do.
Did you watch those teams? Okay.
Yeah, because Kurt was on Kurt. I watched Curtis Stables, Corey. Yeah, I watched them guys.
Yep.
That's two, right?
That's two. Imagine Kurt doesn't make this one. Roanoke.
I gotta get in there for sure.
It's up to you.
Yeah, right, no, for sure. Curtin Staples. I gotta go with a young guy, so I say Malcolm Brogdon.
Well, he's made a lot of them for sure.
Great guy. need one more.
Got one more.
Trying to think. I'll go with my guy, Sean.
All right, that's easy. Right. A lot of guards. Sound like me. A lot of guards.
Yeah.
to go with Ralph.
Yeah, I mean, I could have put Travis Watson in there, too.
Yeah, Travis Watson. That's a good one.
That was real. Travis. All good dudes, man.
Yeah.
Sweet. All right. Well, you gotta go for it.
Put me on the hot.
Yeah, I gotta go. I hear these kids. JR, good talking to
you. Doug, man.
All right. Next time it's Doug Smith for the Mount Rushmore for the record. Number 11, it's all right though. I'll let Corey be there.
All right, JR. So we do this little bit. I'll show you a few images, and just get your like general reaction and thoughts. And here's the first one for the people listening and not watching. This is the starting lineup of that game you talked about: Oak Hill, St. Vincent, St. Mary. Got you. You guys were in the three guard. They got you listed as a guard, but you're right alongside him, a little guy named LeBron James.
Yeah.
And you talked about running up the pregame, but what about during the actual game where they were first ever game on ESPN's got all the hoop love, like March Madness, and you're a high school kid. Like, how did that feel?
I mean, it wasn't nerves for me. It was more excitement. I was excited. I was ready to get out there and compete, going against LeBron, who everybody's been talking about. All year, you know, this is the game that everybody marked on their calendar. Everybody was talking about it. So it was more of excitement.
And did it? And here's this next photo is from your Instagram.
Garden
LeBron James during the game. Did you think, okay, this guy, and you know, was he just another player, or did you actually think, oh, this guy's actually like all that everyone's talking about?
Yeah, I mean, I think after the game, not so much during the game. It was after the game when I looked back on it and I was like, yeah, I understand, you know, what all the hype was about, because he was a special player. I mean, never seen a guy so big and strong and can do everything that he was doing back in high school. So I think it was after the game that, you know, I realized that he was, you know, the real deal.
Yeah, so he was a little. How did you feel about your game that game? Not your best game.
Yeah, definitely not my best game for sure. No, you know, missed a couple easy shots, but you know, it happens. It wasn't. I don't think nobody played good on our team.
Yeah, it wasn't the best game you guys have had. Yeah. And then here's. This is the roster for your first year at UVA, and we kind of did this with Devin Smith earlier. What do you remember about these guys? Like, is there a particular player? Is there a particular memory when you're looking at this? And it's Elton Brown.
Hey, listen, Elton Brown, and Jason Clark was the biggest clowns. They would joke all day, every day, and practice everything. Yeah, them guys. I mean, like I said, we had a fun group. I can't say that we all, you know, excuse me, hung out outside of basketball. So it was a fun group.
I mean, I asked Devin Smith this one. I'll ask you as well. Like Majestic Map had you know, obviously McDonald's All-American. He was literally going to put us on the map, and they had a bunch of injuries. But what do you remember about him? I mean, you saw the obviously the tail end of it, but what were your memories of him?
Majestic was a great guy. He was, you know, he helped me out a lot. You know, just with talking, and like you said, even when he came back from those injuries, you know, you can tell how good he used to be. But you know, those injuries obviously, you know, kind of slowed him down. But Majestic Matt was a great person and a great player.
And then the other one I wanted to talk about, the transformation of Jason Kane from first you guys coming in together, and what he ended up being. I was like, people had the Stash t-shirts and everything. He came like a little. How was that? Did you see that one coming?
I definitely didn't see that one coming, but you know, I was happy for him that he was able to figure it out. But yeah, Jason, yeah, the fans love Jason and his mustache.
And then here, this next one is, this is the schedule from 03-04. This obviously being your first year. And, you know, we talked about, NIT, but you guys actually had a really good stretch here. I mean, you won a bunch of games. Uh-huh. You the NC State was the first loss. I know that, you know, there was some talk about cupcake schedule, this and that, but wins are wins at this point. You get the first time going up against Duke. What was that like?
We played them in camera, or just saying in general?
In general, like this one right here. You know, we kind of got waxed on that one.
That game was exciting for me because I was able to play against my high school rival JJ Redick. So it was fun. Like I said, I love all those big games. I love the big moments. I love the big games. They're very exciting for me, and it's also a challenge, you know. So I love the games. It was very fun.
And those are like measuring stick games, right? Because then you had Duke, and then Georgia Tech next with Jared Jackson. That's the Final Four team. And then Carolina, obviously, Jawad Williams. I mean, those were great teams as well. Then Wake Forest had a young Chris Paul, and you were guarding Justin Gray, I believe. Yep. Did you take something away from all of those games?
For sure. It gave us, like you said, it gave us a measuring stick as to where we were compared to the best teams in the ACC and what we needed to do to get to that point.
And then coming down the stretch here, Devin talked about this a little bit. Getting that win at Clemson and the big win at Carolina and Wake, and then all the pressure was on that Maryland. I was like the play-in game. Do you remember that?
Oh, man. I do remember that game. I do.
What do you remember about it? And Devin said he thought it was just too much pressure at that point because everyone had the hopes.
It was too much pressure because, I mean, everybody knew we had to win. And that's the only thing everybody kept pounding in their heads. You have to win, you have to win, you have to win. Instead of us just going out and competing and playing, you know, without that pressure. But
yeah, that's one things would be different with that win, at least for the season. Yeah. Then you get Clemson, you get pull close one, then it's Duke. And then obviously you go on to the NIT. But how was the NIT experience for you? You had G-Dub and then at Villanova.
It was okay. It's not the tournament, but at Villanova was a very good experience. That was a good game, playing Nova and their gym. I think they had, who did they have? Randy Coy? I can't remember who they had.
Yeah, they had Alan Ray, Randy Ray. Foy. I mean, that was that was a super tough team.
Curtis something. Yeah, they had a very good team. So, a good game. That was a good experience game, especially playing them on the road.
And then here's the following year. This is the last P. Gillen year. You got Sean coming in. I mean, Wake Forest was now 5 with Chris Paul. Georgia Tech was 9. Duke is still there. Carolina, I mean, all the same teams are basically a notch better. We weren't. This is probably this is your toughest year, I imagine, right? I mean,
I don't know. I think Coach Gillen felt the pressure, and I knew that. You know, I'm sure he felt the pressure during this season, and you know, you can tell from everything that was going on. You know, kind of which direction the UVA was going to go in. So it was a tough season. It was a tough season.
Do you remember when we talked about this, Devinson? So sorry to bring you in on this one, but when Pete went to the small ball or stall ball, and like it was at North Carolina, and then you guys just like held the ball.
I don't remember that game.
And like there was 3 games where you guys literally just milked the clock to like 8 seconds left, and then you started running your offense, and you won 3, but it was just like the most random thing ever, and then it kind of went back to the way it was. I was curious if you remembered that.
I remember. I believe it was the North Carolina game.
Yes.
At our house. I remember the game. That game was. That was probably one of the worst games I had. That I've been a part of.
Yeah.
That game was very bad.
Yeah, we think that something happened. Somebody talked to somebody at that game, and that's when things started to change for Pete. That was probably the end for Pete.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because he was trying everything at that point.
Yeah, exactly.
Interesting. And I was going to say that during this time with Sean coming up, did you guys have a rallying call? Like, did you guys do a team, like players only team kind of thing?
Yeah, I'm sure we had plenty of players during this time, but you know, nothing didn't work. You know, we was doing everything we could, but I mean, at the end of the day, you know,
it is what it is.
Yeah, yeah.
And then here, this next one is.
Oh yeah.
I don't know if you remember this. This is Michael Buffer.
Probably a couple days, I believe. I got hit in my eye, and they didn't even think I was going to be able to play in this game. And I remember I was mad because I don't think I started this game. I was mad at Coach Lato for not starting me. I didn't get the intro, exactly. How many people can say they got bored about Michael Buff? How many people say that? And he did not start me. I'm still mad to this day. I did everything to be able to come back and play in this game. I was playing with gargles on. I think they gave me some type of glasses to put over my eye. I came back and I didn't even start. Oh, man.
And that was such an experience. I was there. Like, I flew from California back home just to be there for that, because that was like something as a fan we'd waited our whole lives to see JPJ opening. What about for you guys? How big of a moment was that? Arizona's in town. Like,
man, just to come out in that arena. It was electric. Everybody was into it. You know, the pregame shows, just everything. The whole atmosphere was a perfect opener.
The pregame was this Coach Lato bringing it from university. All that, this little thing. Did you guys all sit there and watch that with everyone else, or were you?
I think I did see this. Yeah. So yeah.
It's kind of corny, but then the lights and you know the fire, and then he does the thing. And there's your guy right there, Jason Kane. And then we come back and win. You had a big game. That was an incredible
atmosphere. And another thing was, I was supposed to keep the glasses that they gave me to protect my eye on the whole game. And I told Coach Lato, I said, I can't play with these things. He said, you have to keep them on. I said, I'm going to take them off. He said, okay, if you take them off, just make sure I don't see you take them off. So I believe it was during a free throw, I just took him off and slung him under the bench, and I played the rest of the game without him.
And did it make a big difference? Like, was it just like – It made a big difference
for sure, yeah.
Was it just like comfort, or was it actually vision?
I think it was just comfort. You know, the smallest things can throw you off no matter what.
Right.
It was, for me, it was just more comfortable without him.
And then here's this next one. You guarding JJ at Cameron. You mentioned it right, so I didn't, you a little bit stole my thunder, but what was it like? I remember always thinking we got the right Jay in this.
Yeah.
But what was your, you know, impression? Because he came out recently and said he almost went to UVA. Like, it was down to UVA because he was such good friends with Elton Brown and Jason Clark that he wanted to go to UVA.
Yeah, they played AAU together.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I played AAU with JJ as well. And like I said, we had our battles in high school. Just, you know, the rivalry always there. I have a lot of respect for him. But, I mean, it's always competitive. Whenever I step on the court, I'm always going to want to beat whoever's in front of me. And obviously, you know, he's a very good player. They set a lot of screens for him, and that was a tough game for sure. I remember that game.
Yeah, they ran around a million screens, and he had that crazy, you know, range back then. At least it wasn't Steph Curry that was doing it. He was the one.
Yeah, exactly. he was down for days.
Yeah, he could really do it. And then, so what about JJ over time? Like, when you guys were in high school playing against each other, was that literally, it was you against him for all that time?
Yeah.
As the two best guys, did you communicate with him at all, or was it
just? Yeah, it was always respect. You know, it was always respect. Whenever we get on the court, it was competitive. But, I mean, like I said, we play AU together. And stuff like that, but it you know how whenever you and him, whenever me and him was going against each other, I mean, that was the talk of the town. So.
It was awesome. and then obviously him becoming the most hated man in college basketball. Yeah. Did you take a little pride in that? Did you enjoy it? Soak that in a little bit?
I just thought it was funny. Yeah,
And now he's kind of redeemed himself a little bit. And then here's the next year we're coming up on, and the one game I wanted to talk to you about while this thing loads, you had at Arizona.
Uh-huh.
You guys went to Arizona, the McHale Center, and got, you know, was that the beginning of the year? Did you guys, was that a rude awakening in terms of starting the year?
It was new coach, new system.
Was Sean hurt? I believe Sean was hurt.
Sean was hurt. Yeah, I think Sean was hurt. Yeah. Yeah, without Sean. So, I mean, it's a big blow. Definitely a huge blow.
And then Saturday, December 17th, you go to Gonzaga. I flew to that game. I was there. That was a cool arena. Like, the fans come down for the starting lineup.
Yeah.
And then you guys had them.
We did.
That phantom technical foul. Do you remember that?
Coach Lato got a technical foul, right? Was it Coach Lato who?
I think it was – it might have been Sean. Sean was on fire, and then I think it was like a minor altercation, and then it was like right at the end.
Yeah, I believe somebody got technical. I can't remember who it was, but yeah. And then it pulled away from there.
Yeah, from that was the end of it. But then I'm just thinking, you now play JJ and Adam Morrison for the, you know, those are the two guys that were the talk of the NCAA, and you'd be gone head to head, and you guys have battled them to the end.
Yeah,
like is this where you were? You guys obviously had confidence, but you knew you could put together something that, you know, with what you got.
Yeah, we knew we could put something together. You know, we just need to get over that hump.
And then you talked about this year a little bit with Coach Lato's first year and all, but the Boston College one was a big one.
Yeah.
That went at home over, you know, borderline top 10 team. Did you think at that point, all right, we can make a run in this in the conference tournament?
Yeah, I did. After that win, I thought I knew the Clemson and North Carolina game was going to be tough, especially on the road. But I mean, the Maryland game was, you know, up in the air. I knew we should have won that one. Yeah.
And then you go end of the season, end of the ACC tournament, and then you guys immediately get that call to go out west. Which, by the way, I was happy because it was a 5-minute drive for me at that point. Mm-hmm. But I remember it was like Sunday, right? And then Tuesday, you guys are in California. playing. It was like not a good turnaround. Do you remember that experience?
I can't remember. It was. I don't remember this. Do I remember Stafford?
It was like, so Selection Sunday, obviously, then you get late Sunday night, we get put in the bracket, and then like literally that day you guys fly out.
Oh, to the West.
Yeah, you guys fly out west.
Yeah.
I wonder what that prep was like, is my question. Like, how did you guys?
It was very short. I don't think, we prepared for them that much. I believe, did we do it in a hotel? I can't remember.
And then, they didn't have, there wasn't a typical Stanford team. It was Trent Johnson. Anyway, all right. That's curious. And then let's move on to the next year. Also, you've got, you're going up against Tyler Hansbrough, the great UNC. You guys get this win.
Yeah.
And what are you thinking at this point? You guys are starting to really put it on. You talked about it earlier.
My thinking was that we just was going to be whoever was in front of us. I was going to do whatever I could for us to win and to get to the top. It was my last year. I didn't have anything to hold back. I was just going to leave it all on the court.
And then you guys finish 11-5. And as I'm scrolling through this, you take a loss at the first loss, Purdue, which was a really tight one. And then you lose for whatever reason, those two weird games.
I definitely don't know how we lost to Appalachian State and Utah.
it was like a weird tournament, though.
Yeah, that was in what was that at Puerto? No,
yeah, it was like Puerto Rico.
Yeah, I don't know. And Coach Lato had to talk to me and Sean over there. Yeah, I don't know what happened. I really don't.
Like, you guys got whipped by those two for no reason, really.
Yeah.
And then you turn around 2 days later and whip Gonzaga, which was like people didn't know what to think at that point.
Yeah, yeah.
If we're going through this thing, then let's get to the one everybody wants to talk about, which is the NCAA tournament.
Uh-huh.
You guys get in this region here. You've got Ohio State as the one seed, and then you've got Virginia, Albany. So was this for you last hurrah? Like, was this a moment? Was there some sort of angst or anxiety around? All right, finally get to the tournament. You can make it ready to make this run. How was that prep and the press and all of that? Like the hoopla.
Yeah, finally get to the tournament after all these years. This is the big showcase. Everybody's going to be watching and just put on a show and win. That was the only thing in my head. Put on a show and win.
So then you guys did do that with Albany. I mean, you ran them out of the gym. I remember that game was like right out of the gate. You guys were up like 12-2, and then it was just like over immediately. So did you guys look at this bracket and think, all right, we can take this one?
I think we were just looking at it one game at a time. Our biggest thing was Albany, taking care of them first, taking care of whoever's in front of us first. And then worry about whoever's next. That was our main thing.
Because then you had Kenny Lofton and Tennessee up there, and they put up 121. But then you guys, like we talked about a little bit earlier, walk us through that game prep. What was that like?
It was good. I mean, I knew Chris Lofton was a very good shooter. I knew that they were going to be looking at that matchup, and they're obviously shining. Can't remember his name for Tennessee, the point guard. I knew it was going to be a great matchup for us and a game that we could win. Exciting. We was going back and forth. It was an exciting game. It had that the NCAA tournament atmosphere and everything. Unfortunately, I had twisted my ankle in the first half. I believe like 6 or 5 minutes left or something like that.
And then did you have a talk in terms of like telling everybody how you were feeling at halftime, or did you just keep to yourself?
I knew it was bad. I just told the trainer just to tape it up. I knew it was bad, but I didn't want to let, you know, everybody else know. And I think Coach knew that it was pretty bad, but I didn't want to let everybody know, especially Tennessee. You know, I didn't want them to see me, you know, kind of hobbling around. Yeah.
And then after that game, you know, I remember Sean takes that last three, falls down. What was that? What was that like, knowing that was your last game in a Virginia uniform?
I mean, it was a sad moment because I knew that, you know, we could advance, and, you know, like I said, unfortunately, you know, I twisted my ankle, and that was the end of you know, a great season that we had that year.
And then did you talk about, because I remember that was the year Sean also declared to go, yep, for a little bit, right? And then he ended up coming back. But did you talk it through with that? Was that a thing you guys talked about or no?
We talked about it a little bit. You know, I just told him to do whatever is best for him and whatever he feels like. That was the best for him. We worked out together in Orlando together. Yep. Was down there, I believe.
And then I was gonna say, here's this next one is you and Jason Kane, senior night. You know, and by the way, those are the best warm-ups, I'll say, in Virginia history. Maybe that's one we got to do with the gray. Those are amazing.
Great, yeah, we're gray.
But what do you remember about this, the senior night? You had your family out, I remember. You were walking out. Is that a cool moment? Now you're JPJ.
Yeah. Now JPJ. Family came out to watch me, you know, play my last home game. It was a bittersweet moment. But, I mean, I remember that game. I think we played Virginia Tech? I can't remember who we played the last
game. Maryland?
Was it Maryland?
I just had the schedule up, so.
It was Florida State.
No, it was, let's see. Virginia Tech. You're right. Virginia Tech.
Yeah, Virginia Tech, so. And I knew Xavier and Jamar, I knew they were going to be tough, so. We had to be ready for them too. So at the same time, it was you know, kind of sad moment, last home game and JPJ and senior night, and then you had to turn that switch to, you know, you got to get ready for this game to go against them too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then we'll jump to this next one, Mark. I don't know if you've seen this one. You posted down two, and this happens. Three quarter court for the win.
But he loses the ball. When he loses the ball,
yeah, he loses the ball. It's a little.
The fans on one side look like they're rooting for the opposing team, have their arms up like they think the game's over.
Yeah, they thought the game was over, yeah.
And then the ball goes, hits the backboard, hits the rim, bounces up, hits
the
rim
again. The funniest part is my teammate kind of skipping down the court after the shot went in. I don't think you guys saw that, but that was the funniest. Yeah, you see him? He's like 6'11". Yeah.
So what were the stakes for this game?
It was the play. I think this game was for us to make the playoffs, I believe.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's.
I knew it was a big game, though. It was a very big game for us. And it was on the road. And those fans were throwing everything on the court after this shot was. I think you could see in the video, they were throwing paper and everything down on the court.
So, game winner wise, how many game winners have you had?
Oh man,
in your career now, can you?
I'm not sure.
I mean, this has got to be up there, though, right?
Oh yeah, for sure. Yeah, for sure.
You don't even see this very often, ever. Just hit like a full court shot for the win.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm waiting for this to happen in an NCAA game, because then America's gonna flip out when that happens. and then this next one, you and Sean I guess this was a practice last year. Was it? Yeah,
Was it last year?
No. This is like four years ago. Yeah.
4 years ago. Yeah.
I was gonna say you guys. Yeah, obviously the bond at UVA. But what is your relationship been with like with him? We had him. He's been on our show a bunch.
Yeah, I still keep in touch with him. You know, check on him. We still keep in touch with each other.
That's awesome. And then, you know, Sean's now back in Charlottesville. He does the Fundamental Factory, and he's trying to, you know, get back on his feet. He's talked with us openly about the struggles of post-NBA career.
Oh, yeah.
And the adjustment to that. So it's kind of interesting. What are your thoughts for him, next steps for him?
Just keep grinding. That's it. You know, just keep grinding, keep being positive, and, you know, just keep working hard. Something eventually going to open up for him. You know, whenever that door opens, he just got to be ready for it.
And then here's the next, you know, UVA podcast. We got to ask you about, this is the UMBC loss. Where were you?
I was overseas, and I believe I received so many messages from all my friends and everything. I had to turn my phone off. It was like, you know, I'm in a group chat with a few group chats, and they were like, how can you guys lose this and this and that? And I'm like, man, you know what? It happens. Unfortunately, you know, it had to happen to this, but.
Did you actually watch the game live, or this was like middle of the night for you?
Yeah, the middle of the night, yeah.
So you woke up to this, the news of Virginia loses. I can't imagine.
I woke up to it, exactly. I was like, you know, I'm going to get this win. I don't need to watch this game. And then I woke up, and it's all over, you know, social media and everywhere. I got, like I said, all these text messages from friends and everything. And I felt bad. You know, I felt bad for the players and the coaches.
I was gonna say your time at overseas, has it been really difficult keeping up with the sports in the U.S. just purely because of the time zone?
Yeah, the time zone. But if it's a good game, I mean, if it's a important game, you know, I stay up to watch it. You know, especially if we only have practice, I'm more than likely going to stay up and watch it.
That's awesome. Uh-huh. And then here's this next one. Coach Bennett screaming after beating, this is Purdue. Were you able to watch some of those games?
I watched all of them. Yep.
And, what was your thought on this? And frankly, Tony Bennett, I know he's reached out and talked to a bunch of the guys. Well, what has your relationship been like with the program since he's taken over?
I mean, it's been good. I mean, I go back, I try to go back every summer, you know, to spend time with the guys and the coaching staff. I mean, all of them, you know, Tony Bennett is amazing person. He always, you know, open his arms and whatever I want whenever I go in there. You know, great teacher. You know, if I ask him questions or anything like that, you know, lets me sit in on practice, watch practice. But I mean, he's an amazing guy, great character, and you know, I see why everybody, you know, love him. And too bad I didn't get to play for him. But you know, it's always good to go back and watch him teach the players.
And then here's this next one. This is the championship. Yeah. All the guys,
man. It's good. You know, I always, you know, that's one of the main reasons why I went back, because I was looking at the other universities and I saw, you know, at North Carolina and at Wake Forest and at Duke, how the guys came back to the university. And we never had that at UVA. Guys never came back. Yeah. After they finish playing and you know, kind of give guys knowledge or work out with the guys that's there. And, you know, I wanted to start doing that. That's something I said, after I'm done, I want to stick around. And if I'm able to help any guys or whatever it is, I want to come back, try to come back each summer and do that. So it was good to see all the guys there, you know, yeah. Mason and everybody together.
Yeah, I mean, we've had a bunch of these guys. We've had everyone there come on. And one of the things they mentioned was when Gillen took over, there wasn't that open door, the open arms policy, and that died until Coach Bennett came back, right?
Exactly.
So, yeah, exactly. It's really cool to have have everyone coming back. Because I think Jamal was another one. He said he tried to come back to see you guys, you know, with Gillen's crew, and he was not accepted, so he just didn't do it anymore, which is a little bit of a shame, and probably, you know, just miscommunication, but I'm glad that it's back, because it is really cool. Like, stuff like this is so cool, and having you on here to talk to us is awesome.
Yeah.
And then here's this next one. This is the guys kneeling. This is after Colin Kaepernick's.
I didn't see this picture. I don't know why I didn't see it.
This is Ty's first year, so this is now 4 years ago. And you see DeAndre Young, Jay Huff, Kyle Guy's got the man bun. But what are your thoughts? Obviously, you're overseas and not really seeing the brunt of this, but you know, especially with the Colin Kaepernick piece. Like now it's obviously in the forefront, but you know, when this went down, like what were your thoughts on it? Like that's an American like thing.
No, the picture is amazing. You know, I'm glad the guys were able to, you know, to express this and you know, the main thing is his message and the reason as to why he did it. You know, that was the main thing that I think that was amazing for, you know, everybody who joined in.
I was going to say, you've been to all these international countries. What is the police sort of, I don't know, stance like in all these countries? Is it also the state of fear and militarized? And
No, I don't. I mean, from my experience, I haven't, no, for sure, no.
Yeah. You have not noticed it?
No, not at all. Not like here. In Europe, it's not. Definitely not like here.
Interesting. Something for us as Americans to learn. And then here's this next one.
Yeah.
This is the neo-Nazi group coming to Charlottesville. I was just curious if you heard about this. Do you see this? Obviously, you're not close to it, but what was your reaction when you did see it?
Kind of disappointed, you know. But, just kind of disappointed that it happened and that is still happening now, and it happened at the university that I attended.
Right.
That was my main thing, just disappointed.
Yeah, this was a tough one, and all that's going on. Mark held a little round table and had a bunch of guys just talk about, you know, racism and how prevalent it still is and how we can help. And it was pretty cool. We had a Wally Walker, we had a bunch of guys on here.
Oh, okay.
All the old UVA basketball heads come on and just sort of like chime in and talk and just try to learn.
And a few recent ones. Malcolm came on.
Yeah, Malcolm.
I saw Malcolm in he was in Atlanta protesting. Yeah, he was doing the protest in Atlanta. That was, you know, it was big.
This is you and Sean Singletary in the alumni field for the basketball tournament. I know that got canceled or moved. What were your thoughts on that?
I don't know how this started. I don't even think I said I was going to play. I'm like, oh, really? I'm playing? I didn't know that.
That's awesome. it says you and Sean, Akil, Darion. Obviously, that was before all of this happened. But
yeah, before all of this happened, yeah.
Did you and Sean talk about maybe playing in it? Is that?
Yeah, we talked about it for sure. But I told him like I didn't think I was gonna play because the season is so long, and you know, especially with me playing maybe one or two more years, you know, I didn't
extra mileage.
Yeah, extra mileage, exactly. You know, that rest is real important for me at this point in my career. So
that's awesome.
Yeah,
we appreciate you so much coming on.
It would have been good to get back on the court with Sean for sure.
Yeah, Sean. I mean, Sean was kind of. We had him on the podcast when this came out, and he was just like, "I'm gonna try. Like, I don't know how my body's gonna hold up." That was his comment. He's like, "I'll do whatever, but I don't know if I can actually physically play with these guys." But he was down to give it a shot, which I thought was cool.
Yeah,
that's the end of the photo series. So thank you so much for taking a trip down memory lane with us.
And thank you, man. Thank you. Those pictures were, it was good to see those again.
And then how often are you coming back to Charlottesville at this point?
I was just there. I'll be back next week.
Oh, nice. Next week. Yeah. That's awesome. And then, and you said plans, you're based in Atlanta when you come home. And how often are you actually home? Because you said your season is it's like 10 months, right?
Yeah, it's from like August to May or June. It just depends on, you know, we make the playoffs or not. But I say from June to August, you know, I'm in the States.
And then your family is still in Roanoke? Okay. So you do go, you get to go back and see them as well.
Get to go back and see them. That's great. I go up to Charlottesville whenever I'm in that area.
And hang out.
Yep, hang out.
That's great, man.
The gym's the start, the open back up, man. It's, yeah, ready to get back on the court.
Back to work.
Yeah, get back to work.
Anything else you can think of, Mark?
No. Thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you guys for having me. Now, I love what you guys are doing. You know, bringing back old players, former players, and, you know, keep up the good work.
Yeah, we appreciate you. We got a little package for you. I'll get your info after.
Okay.
For some gear to bring overseas.
Yeah, thank you.
And JR, when you get a chance, check out the Jay Willie Show on Monday nights.
Okay.
Williford.
Okay, yeah. Oh, yeah. I saw that. Yeah, I did see that. I got to check it out.
Yeah, please do. They're fun, and it's lighthearted, and sometimes it's educational. Well, it's always informative. And we just launched football podcast as well.
Oh, yeah. You know, my roommate is a coach there, Marcus Hagan.
Yeah. That's awesome. We have Ahmad Hawkins. I don't know if you remember him. And then Tony Covington, who played in that number one team back in the day. Those two guys are running the equivalent for football.
Oh, nice. Nice. I like those shoes, too. I couldn't get them. They sold out, but.
Nike. Okay. Are you a Nike? Are you on Team Nike or no? Not sponsored?
No, I'm not sponsored, but I have Nikes for sure. Yeah,
because these are definitely nice.
Yeah, they are. I try to get them on the sneakers app, man.
Yeah, same here. So our sponsor is GOAT. One of our sponsors is GOAT app. So,
okay.
We try to support them when we can. But I couldn't get them on sneakers too. I don't know who's getting them on there.
Yeah, exactly.
So resellers maybe.
Yeah.
Thank you again.
Slam. That's the winner here. It's the tournament's about.